As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast, Season 4, Episode 17. This is our 100th episode. Woo! Woo! Like the banners. You know, we should have done something festivus for this one. Anywho, my name is Tim Mitchell. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kula in Mississauga, Ontario.
100, baby!
And we also have Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
No, I was waiting for the 100 baby or something.
Jaime cannot deviate from the script. He has a how's
yeah,
it going?
How are you doing? Yeah.
That's what he does.
And he's got the I don't know if you've ever seen Jaime's emoticon, but it's the, what is it called? Blue Steel? Is that what it's called?
My avatar or my emoji or which?
The eyebrow you raise and the isn't that the thing from Zoolander?
It's similar, yes.
That's true. Oh, I see. It's your own patented.
It's my own, exactly. Exactly.
I have a really blurry photo of I think one of the only photos where me, Mark, and Jaime are in actually the same room. And I just noticed the other day I was looking at it. It's really blurry because it's shot with my old iPhone, but you can see that Jaime's got his eyebrow raised. Anyway. Alrighty. Fact check. So, first of all, Eric Winter is the actor who plays Tim Bradford on The Rookie. We were talking about somebody who could possibly play, who would be built sort of the right shape and size for... but you're right. I guess Nathan Fillion would have been a good choice for that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, for Nathan Drake for the Uncharted movie, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And the other bit of fact check I have here is the movie Rust, which is the film set where Alec Baldwin fatally shot the director of photography, will not be completed. They've announced last week. So I don't have a link for that, but I just remember seeing that it was not going to be completed, I guess, you know, because, you know, kind of morbid now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd be awfully hard to be back on the movie set given the circumstances.
Alrighty, so I guess we'll dig into the headlines and Jaime's up first. Jaime, what?
Yeah, the big one here is the first trailer for The Book of Boba Fett.
Woo-hoo!
Debuting on Disney Plus December 29th.
Yep, just in the nick of 2021.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true. That's our last little present for the year, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks interesting. I mean... You know, it's sort of, you know, the old trope of let's try it a new way kind of approach to things, right?
Well, it's funny because we talked about the Book of Boba Fett a few different times since the end of the last Mandalorian season. You know, Boba Fett has been this very popular culty character for Star Wars fans for a very, very long time. And it's interesting that, you know, over the years, there's been so much, you know, wouldn't it be cool? Oh, wouldn't it be amazing? And oh, if there was only a way that they could, you know, bring him back and do a story. And there was talk that they were going to do one of those Star Wars story movies that when they were doing Rogue One and they were doing, you know, the spinoffs, the solos and stuff like that. Oh, maybe that's where it'll end up. And yeah, the fact that it's going to be this longer form, a real chance to soak in, get back into the world of the scum and villainy half of the Star Wars universe to even just the trailer, I was getting goosebumps at times where, you know, they're back in Jabba's palace. They're back in the cities on Tatooine. There's all these great, you know, alien creatures and the makeup and the practical effects. And it's always been my favorite part of the Star Wars universe is frankly, the diversity, just the idea that, you know, that is this like huge mosaic from around the galaxy and you know, to have them just dive back into that world. It looks so much fun.
It's interesting, though, that the character was sort of very enigmatic and never really said much, and that, you know, he was just sort of the mysterious, you know, silent stalker.
That's the appeal, though, right? Like, that's one of the things that people like so much is that it's, you know, he's this sort of man of mystery, this masked man, you know. Now, obviously, we've seen what's under the hood, and hopefully through this series, we'll get a little bit more, you know, how did he survive? What does he want now? How does he sort of, you know, where does he map out his future going from here? Obviously, we saw the end of The Mandalorian. Spoilers if you haven't seen Mandalorian, but, you know, it's been a while. But, you know, he goes in, he kills Bib Fortuna, who was Jabba's major domo. And he climbs up onto Jabba's throne like he owns the place. And it sort of sets the stage for, you know, his sort of descent back into the underworld. But it'll be interesting to see how they, you know, he's always been that sort of, you know, he has a code. He's not just, you know, a mindless killing machine or anything like that. Like he does his own sort of personal code. It'll be interesting to see where that lines up with, you know, getting back into this world of scum and villainy.
Yeah, I just mean that, like, he started out not saying very much, and now he doesn't stop talking.
All right, well, that's fair. All right, it's fair. But, yep. Did you guys notice in the trailer there was a couple of interesting-looking characters? We obviously saw Ming-Na Wen came back as Fennec Shand, who we, you know, we recognize from The Mandalorian. And then we also saw Jennifer Beals walking by at one point as a Twi'lek.
Another story for the headlines.
Okay, so speaking of trailers, we got our first look at Morbius, the Marvel series adaptation starring Jared Leto this week. This is set in the Venom quasi Spider-Man verse. As a matter of fact, if you guys were watching that trailer, you would have noticed that there was a couple of different spots where they overtly reference some of the other parts of the Spider-Verse that Sony owns the rights to. We got one scene where we see Morbius in his human guise as Dr. Morbius walking at one point, and we see a Spider-Man poster on the wall behind him. So again, a clear overt reference to the fact that this occurs in the same space as Spider-Man, or we'll say a Spider-Man. It could be a different Spider-Man. And he also references Venom at one point. And we also see him interacting with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And Michael Keaton, of course,
Batman,
played the Vulture in his Spider-Man Homecoming. So.
Oh, did he? Oh, I thought he was the Batman.
Well, he is the Batman, but in the Marvel Universe, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he's the Vulture.
And oh, he's DC, right? DC.
DC for Batman, and this for, right. Yeah. So he was the Vulture, and he, you know, sort of wink and nod at the camera, hey, we should stay in touch, you know? So, yeah, so you guys, I don't know what your background is as far as your knowledge of Morbius. Are you guys familiar with Morbius as a character?
I know nothing about Morbius.
So he was Morbius the Living Vampire. He was
sort of vampire-y kind of guy.
Debuted in, issue 100-something, 102, 103 of Amazing Spider-Man way back in the day. And he is basically a vampiric character. And one of those sort of anti-heroes in the vein of Venom, sort of straddling the line between good and bad.
Yeah, I think seen a few comics. I don't think solo comics. I think they were probably team ups with Spider-Man or something. But just a tiny bit of familiarity with the character.
Is he a good guy that turns into like a vampire-y kind of guy, or is he Jekyll and Hyde?
Yeah, it's more like, you know, it's the sort of age old monster story of, you know, I don't want to be doing these things, but I have to because this is what my monstrous nature dictates. Yes. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they hinted that in the trailer, of course. It's, again, I'm not dying to see this. This wasn't like top of my list. You know, I know there are of course, you know, Marvel fans who love that horror side of the universe and will be very into this. And it certainly doesn't look like a bad film. It just, I'll put this one in the same bucket that I put, you know, Venom into, which is, oh, what a neat trailer. Okay. I'll watch it when it comes to Netflix or insert streaming service here. Is this a movie theater go for either of you?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I know nothing about the character. I do like Jared Leto generally as an actor, so it's a possibility, but yeah, I don't know. It's kind of, I'm not a huge vampire fan, right? So
yeah.
But then I used to say I wasn't a huge zombie fan, and then The Walking Dead came out, you know, yeah, and 28 we'll Days and
Shaun Again, Death. I'm not rushing out.
But there you go.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a theater watch for me either. I think I'll watch it though. It looks like it's got an interesting style to it, as it's a alternative theory on how coronavirus started. Apparently, as he puts his hand and puts it in front of the bat cave.
Maybe that's a cure. That's how the Pfizer was invented, right? I guess
exactly.
Yeah, you guys can cut that one out and put it as a meme online. See, watch the hate tweets coming in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up in the headlines, we've got news that there's going to be two Marvelous hosts for SNL over the next few weeks. Yeah. We got news that Jonathan Majors, who of course plays Kang, or I can't remember, what did they refer to him as in Loki? He wasn't Kang, he was the man in purple or something. Anyways, so that's right. So he is going to be hosting the show in 2 weeks on the 19th, the 13th of November. And he will be joined by musical guest Taylor Swift. And we're also going to get Mississauga's own Simu Liu. Mississauga's own Simu Liu is going to be the host the week after that on November 20th. And musical guest is going to be Saweetie.
Cool. I guess there's another story here, too. And I'm just looking at this tweet from SNL. I mean, I'm really happy. We'll talk about Simu Liu in a second. But Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
What is happening with him? Is he actually going to, is he going to do like from his living room via satellite or something?
They said today he's been confirmed. So just to bring our listeners up, if they're not into it, Ed Sheeran was diagnosed with COVID and he was supposed to be on SNL this weekend in our time. So the sixth.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be on as the musical guest with Kieran Culkin as the host. And then they announced he was going to go into quarantine after being diagnosed with COVID. He now says he's been cleared to perform on Saturday Night Live after quarantining. So he is going to...
In a bubble or what?
I couldn't say. I'm guessing Ed Sheeran's got a couple pennies to rub together. I bet you as far as these things go, it's probably a pretty good quarantine session.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, Saturday, he's supposed to be there.
Right. And so why, so I'm totally missing why Kieran Culkin is hosting, other than his awesome performance in...
Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim, yes, of course. Yes.
Yes. Kieran Culkin's actually a really good actor. He's actually one of the stars of Succession right now. And Succession is one of the hottest TV shows around for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So he is going to be hosting on the merits of Succession. They're, I think, 2 weeks at this point into their third season, and so is why he's going to be there. But you're right, I mean, he's I will never not think of him as Wallace Wells from Scott Pilgrim, where he stole every scene he was in and was beyond hilarious. He's in there's a really good movie from, it's a ways back now, it's got to be almost 15-20 years old, but he's in a great movie called Igby Goes Down when he was a young man. That I'm really quite fond of as well. He hasn't had enough starring turns. I'm really glad he's had this sort of renaissance, because he's a very, very talented person.
Yeah. So in Succession, have you, either of you guys watched that show at all? Or
saw a few episodes of the first season. Mm-hmm.
I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. Okay. Is it just typically what it says it is on the tin, like, you know, bunch of kids wanting to take over from their dad or whatever?
I mean, there's a lot of family drama around the who gets dad's money kind of thing. He's trying to stay in power as he has like dementia.
Yeah.
So they sort of say that it's loosely based on the Fox, the family that owns Fox News, right? The Murdochs.
Oh, okay, right. Gotcha.
So, you know, the idea that, you know, this guy sort of amassed this giant, you know, massive fortune and powerful empire of whatever, and then it's, you know, as he's starting to sort of hit the sunset of his life, the kids are all standing around with steak knives trying to figure out who gets what piece.
Right, gotcha. Sort of like the Rogers drama that's going on right now.
Pretty much that, yeah. Although, you know, yeah. This is Canada, so there's a lot of, like, Sauriers in there.
Yeah, so, Jaime, are you familiar with the Rogers drama that's going on right now?
I am not.
So we had a gentleman named Ted Rogers, who's the person who set up Rogers, world domination internet Canada thing here. You know, they own, like, they bought Skydome, they own most of the TV stations around, they bought all the cell phone, half of the cell phone companies in Canada.
Yep. The Blue Jays.
I was going to say the Blue Jays. And they're easily number one provider, I guess, here. So anyway, Ted Rogers, you know, being mortal, passed away many, many years ago. And his kids took over. And so now there was a power play the last couple of weeks where one of the sons wanted to take over and the daughters were going, no effing way. The stock took a nosedive in the middle of last week, I think it was. And it's on its way back up again. But yeah, there was big, you know, front page stories about this dynasty of kids that are fighting over their dad. Very much, you know, like I imagine Succession is, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but in real life. Yeah, we have another couple of, we had Belinda Stronach had a thing with her family too, with there were another.
Yeah, it's Magna International, which is the largest car parts company on the planet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they had a big power play too. She was a politician for a while too, but mm-hmm. Anywho. All right, well, kids, this is kind of a strange thing because we normally roll into the main part of the show here, and so we're not sure. Are we talking about Doctor Who today, or am I just doing the follow-up on Doctor Who?
We can talk in broad strokes about Doctor Who. But I mean, we won't get too far into the details.
We're here to talk about Prodigy, but so let's get Doctor Who real quick out of the way. We had the surprise premiere was announced. Like Jonathan gave me like an hour's heads up, I believe, as to when it was on.
Yeah.
Just sort of showed up. It was like weird time too, like 6:05 or
yeah,
something.
It was like 6:55 or 7:55 or something.
Something that's really thrown off the Rogers PVR because they never plan things like that. Yeah. So anyway, I did happen to catch it, and that's the case where, I mean, as we were talking about earlier, this one, because Rogers is going to play with, or whoever's going to play with the when these things come out, I just told it to record Doctor Who on Sunday, no matter what time it shows at. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The only way to survive, right? So yeah, we're back with Jodie Whittaker and I've forgotten her name now, the lady who plays Mandeep Gill. Is it Mandeep Gill? Okay. Yeah. I have a friend at work named Mandy, that's why I got confused. But anyway, so the two of them now, the two boys have left the show as of, I think it was last year.
Or yeah, the season finale special. Last year, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just the two of them. They've been, while we've been away, they do this all the time in Doctor Who. They come back and they imagine that the companion and the doctor have been on all kinds of crazy adventures. So now Yaz is all, you know, all wise about the ways of the doctor and who she is and all that kind of stuff. And they're sort of having a banter back and forth as they normally do. We find that there's a new menace, of course. Mm-hmm. And the character that shows up is near the end of it is these big warrior race guys that have these big round heads. They look like Robbie the Robot kind of shape, you know, and then take the head off and then the helmet off, which is shaped like Robbie the Robot's dome, and their heads are domed shaped. And they are Sontarian warriors. And I think they came from the second generation of Doctor Who, like the David Tennant, Matt Smith kind of era, right?
Yep.
I'm trying to remember what the menace was in this show. Oh, so the TARDIS has got some sort of weird thing, but as we talked about before, this is not a standalone episode. It's meant to be a story arc that runs through the whole season, and because it doesn't definitely conclude, it kind of there's a bit of peril at the beginning. They're the two of them are about to be dispatched by some alien, We learn they managed to escape. We won't give that away, but of course they escape, right? And then because it couldn't have a season if they didn't have a doctor.
I was going to say, it would have been a great twist to be like, and they both died.
Yes, and now we have no doctor, and we're just going to watch blank space for the next, you know, six episodes. But anyway, the alien turns out, I forgot the name of the race. But
they were the Lupari, and that was Carvanista.
And we're introduced to this new character who gets kidnapped by one of these creatures who looks like a dog, and the guy thinks it's right on Halloween, which is kind of a tie-in, interesting tie-in, because he thinks the person who's or the alien that's kidnapped him is wearing a costume to make him look like a dog. Mm-hmm. And of course, we learn in the episode, and it's not too much of a spoiler, that this dog race is coming to Earth to protect humans. You know, in other words, man's best friend.
Yep.
And that every dog owns a human.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that Kirby will protect Jonathan and Cinta will protect Sarah.
Yeah, she's sure protected too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Lupari apparently have like basically each is assigned a human, whether they like it or not, to protect.
Yeah, yeah. So the guy who gets kidnapped doesn't really understand that why he's being kidnapped by this dog. And of course, the doctor shows up to try and intervene. And the dun 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 at the end is when the Suntarian warrior takes off his helmet, and we find out that they're involved somehow. And we don't really, it doesn't really conclude the episode because it leads into obviously the next episode. So we have to tune in next week to see what is ailing the TARDIS and what is, you know, happening with the door keeps moving. Actually, I think it was the
yeah, it's the leaking play. Fluids and the door keeps moving and yeah and there's the giant space menace and
hitting it with a hammer to get it to do what she wants to do, right?
Yeah. It's an interesting sort of kickoff to the season. There's this sort of, I mean, it's very Doctor Who. It's very much, you know, we get kicked off, we get introduced to a couple of new characters. There's a little bit on Earth, but this one seems like, you know, they kind of take big swings sometimes when they get to the last season of a Doctor, and obviously this is Jodie Whittaker's last season. It seems like a pretty ambitious storyline that they're embarking on. You know, there's something happening in the past, there's something happening in the present, there's something happening in outer space, there's something happening, you know, with the TARDIS. There's some tension between the Doctor and her companion. So yeah, it sort of throws you right into the middle of it, and you know, I don't always love it when they do that, because you're just like, what, who are we supposed to know who this is? Are we supposed to remember this from previous? And but some of the mysteries that they've sort of laid out already are interesting. So yeah, definitely always in for a good season of Doctor Who. But yeah, this was just coincidentally timed. This was the season premiere dropped on Halloween night, and there was a bit of a Halloween theme to the episode, and then it's going to carry on, and now we're back to once a week every Sunday, and yeah, into Doctor Who and the last season of Jodie Whittaker. So
it's kind of interesting that they decided to drop this at, you know, on Halloween, and they did the same thing in the UK, so it all it all premieres on the same day. However, I gotta say, 6 o'clock or whenever it was it came out, that's when the kids are at the door asking for candy. So like, that was a really dumb timed premiere. If it wasn't for PVRs, a lot of people would be pissed, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people missed it too.
Well, anyway. Nowadays most people can either set a virtual PVR or real PVR or pause live TV. So at least there's that. It would have been definitely a lot more challenging a few years back, but
yeah, definitely. And you can stream it on Space, whatever app they use, CTV app or whatever.
So I'm curious, Jaime. So last year was the first year you watched Doctor Who, right?
No, it was the second year.
So you've been in since Jodie Whittaker came in.
That's correct.
And so are you're keen? You're in for her final go?
I think I'm going to have to catch up on this one. I think where I'm at with it is that, you know, it's good. It's nice. I don't know that I feel compelled. And I guess that may not be a unique part through the fan base. But I'll watch.
Oh, that's pretty typical of a fan of Doctor Who.
Watch when it's on. And
you're not really sure if you should be tuning in. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It really does seem like the most haphazard kind of show. As I say, the only reason I caught up on it is a friend of mine used to work at CTV Sci-Fi, and he said, "Hey, PSA, by the way, is I got the heads up this is coming out tonight," and I immediately flipped it over to Tim and put it out on the socials, being like, "Hey,
oh, is that how that worked?
If
okay,
you
yeah.
don't know, I didn't know, and you know, the only reason I knew is because somebody in the know knew." So, yeah, it's again, I don't watch nearly as much commercial television as I used to. I certainly don't watch CTV Sci-Fi as much as I used to, now that there's so many other options and there's certainly more on demand and everything else. But it would have completely escaped me. I don't remember seeing any ads for it. I don't remember reading much about it. I knew they were doing a third season. I knew that they were doing Jodie Whittaker's last season, but I couldn't have told you when it was coming.
Yeah, there was no date, no. We would have talked about it on the show. There was nothing.
Oh, it would have been somebody's pick, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, for
whatever,
sure.
Whatever. Yeah, it was handled weird. Yeah. So I'm glad I wasn't the only one. I said, oh, maybe just because I'm not like a huge historical fan, maybe I just
hadn't realized it was coming out on Halloween. It sounds like.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an odd time. I kind of trying to remember now. Because, I mean, things used to come out, like I said, September used to be the sort of time when things rolled out. But all that's gotten skewed in the last
Well, Doctor Who's always marched the beat of its own drum. Again, for a long time there, they would debut or end a season around the holidays. Because that was, for a while there, the Christmas episode was the first episode of the season. And then they moved it to New Year's. And now it's Halloween. I mean, I can't wait till they get Arbor Day celebration for Doctor Who.
Yeah, and I think, I can't remember if it was the first episode of the last season with Matt Smith, but I think they did a simulcast where you could go and watch it in the theater at the same time as it was on BBC TV. And I think they did that again with Capaldi's last season as well.
Yeah, I know they did that for that Day of the Doctor, the one where they all teamed up and stuff.
Oh, right.
Like that.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah. That was a great episode. Yeah. That's one where, like, it's a really good episode, Jaime, but I would suggest that you try and catch some David Tennant episodes and some Matt Smith episodes before you watch that one.
And again, in the fine tradition of Doctor Who, good luck. Just, you know, you can't just watch season 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's all these like random specials and stuff that are sort of tucked in there. And yeah, it's, you kind of need a watcher's guide from the internet to make sure you're not missing anything, because they carry important threads through like random specials and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And every Doctor has his own sort of little proclivities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Today's episode was called Starstruck.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps because it was a big episode with Kate Mulgrew in it, I don't know. But so how would you introduce a young audience, say, you know, 10 to 12 year olds, to the whole concept of a starship and the Federation and that kind of stuff in an episode? And that's what they did here today. Was, you know, they talked about why Janeway was a hologram and what her purpose was. And she basically says she's here to advise and maintain the lower level functions of the ship, because obviously these people that are on the ship now have no idea what's going on. She's a little suspicious of them at first. She's kind of asking them, like, you know, okay, who's the captain? And, you know, of course, the prisoner sitting in the captain's chair says, I'm the captain. And Dal says, you know, I'm the captain. And they all kind of look at him like, what? And she says, Janeway kind of cues into that and says, I get the feeling that you're not really telling me the truth, kind of thing. And I think you're all cadets because none of you are in uniform and you don't look like you know what you're doing. And, you know, of course, the old trope of, well, you know, why don't you tell me about the Federation for my crew here who, I mean, I know, but they may not know, right? So kind of thing. And there's this interesting little 3D hologram thing like they do in these modern sci-fi shows where you see Janeway explain to them about, you know, how the Federation is made up of a variety of different inhabitants from different planets, all coming together with a common goal to improve the universe and that kind of stuff. And of course, they have like super, you know, Vulcans and Dorians and a few other races that you're familiar with, and different ships and things like that. There's little holographic planets. Of course, Morph tries to eat one of the little holographic planet. It comes at the back of his head, of course. But, you know, and that sort of lays a thread for the part of the episode, too, in terms of where it's going to go. Because hold on to that thought for a minute. So she calls them greenhorns at one point, which is interesting because, you know, I think Rock reaches to her head and goes, I don't have a horn kind of deal. They're off the ship. They're trying to find out if there's a brig where they can put the prisoner or their captive. Janeway tells them to go to the starboard side of the ship and whatever. And of course, you know, they're walking through the ship going, I don't know which side of what does starboard mean? And as they're going through, trying not to admit to Janeway, they don't know what they're talking about. They do stumble across, Morph helps them stumble across where the brig is, and they end up putting the girl in there.
Yeah, Gwyn, the leader of the bad guy's son. This is the diviner's son, or daughter, rather.
On the way there, Dal says to them, you know, like, you know, I don't want to listen to Janeway. I don't want to listen to authorities because they're always just trying to, you know, just another name for someone in charge. And, you know, Charles trying to tell us what to do. And of course, Rock looks at him and says, aren't you in charge? Are you lying to us too? Kind of thing. And anyway, so we flash over to the diviner who's now, you know, looking up into space, trying to figure out how to get his ship back. And Crimerium is the name of the crystal, I guess, that they used as their currency to try and to win stuff. Oh, something just popped in here. Is that you?
Okay. That was me. That was. These are all the names. Yeah.
I'm just going to muddle through it anyway. And of course, he says, you know, prepare Rev 12, which is this big, giant, menacing-looking ship that they're going to go and chase after these guys with. So Jenkum and Rock end up down in the mess hall, and he's like, where's the mess? I don't see any mess in this mess hall. And Janeway pops up and says, they keep dismissing Janeway, by the way, but just, I forgot to mention that. But she pops up and tells them that, you know, they have this, the food replicators can replicate any food you want of any kind. And Jenkum says, well, I don't really have any credits on me, you know, sort of thing. And Janeway says, well, as cadets, you should know that we've done away with currency in the Federation. What is it called? What's Rock call it? She mispronounces Federation. I forgot.
Yeah.
Femeration or something like that?
Yeah. What's a Femeration?
Yeah. What's a Femeration? Anyway, so they discover that they can have any kind of gloop that they want. Of course, they just go up to the ship and they mention some sort of alien substance. And of course, the replicator knows perfectly well what they're talking about and creates it for them. And then Rock, poor soul, asks for the only food she's ever eaten, which is the slop that they feed him in the prison colony, right? So, to which Jamie says, I like a woman who knows what she wants, kind of thing. Which is interesting because we decided last week that we were going to use pronouns with Rock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anywho,
Female is the way to go.
Yeah. Later on, Jenkum is down banging away in the engineering area, and Zero comes by and asks what he's doing, and he says he's just checking things out, and of course he finds that this ship's amazing. It's got two warp cores, which means it can have two ejections in one episode if they want. and Zero says, what's this thing here? And it's a big sort of domey thing. I don't think they really describe what it is, but obviously that's kind of like, you know, some sort of fabulous drive that's going to come up later on in the story in the future. By the way, they don't really reveal to the kids of watching the show that this is the engineering area. Of course, those of us Trekkies all knew what it was right away, right? But, and of course, they start hearing red alert, red alert, and they find out that they're heading to, forgot, earlier in the story, you know, Janeway suggests, you know, that she sets a course for them, and Ral, being, you know, typical, you know, goofball, says, no, I don't want you to set it, I'll set the course, and he says, I think we should go, and he just spins the map and points to a little red star and says we should go there. Of course, it's a red dwarf, right? And so the red alert is that they're now approaching this red dwarf, which is being sucked in a gravity well by a white dwarf, which is destroying everything around it. And, you know, because of the gravitational, the contraction of a white dwarf pulls everything in, creates a gravity well and pulls everything in towards it, including the red dwarf, which they were heading to. So now they're stuck trying to get in there. Somebody tells him not to use a warp drive, warp engine. Janeway says, don't use a warp engine in a gravity well. It's not a good idea. And of course, so then he says, he dismisses Janeway. Go away. You're bothering me. And they're getting sucked into this thing. And he says, you know, because when he realizes he can't use the warp drive, let's use the impulse power. And of course, impulse power isn't really working for them. And he says, put all the resources into the, direct everything, or I forget the terminology they use, but direct all that energy over to the impulse drive, and of course everything turns off, right? And Gwyn escapes because it brings down the barrier of the brig, and so Gwyn just able to walk out and tries to escape, and then of course you're in his panic. Dal says, you know, just eject everything that's not needed, you know, so we can get some, reduce our weight. And of course, it starts ejecting all the escape pods, which is where she's heading. And she asks the computer, aren't there any more escape pods? And the computer says, no, but there's a vehicle replicator, which is a new thing. And I can make you a shuttlecraft in the shuttle bay. So she heads down there to get that done. And that's when Rock comes up and discovers her missing. And they have a tussle. In the tussle, Gwyn goes over and turns off the gravity. And so everybody's floating around in the ship now. So now they're in a real conundrum, you know, heading towards this white dwarf. You know, they got no gravity, they have no power because they've diverted it all to the impulse engines, right? That's the word I was looking for, diverted. Janeway pops back in and tells them how to go ahead and reverse all this bad energy they got going and get their ship back under control. And then she explains at the end of the episode that that, as you know, this is a perfect example of the Federation concept of a collection of species aspiring to do better. And as she does, the camera kind of pans around, and you realize that the collection of rare species that haven't really don't really know anything about each other, of course, are the characters on the show, because they're all from all of different races and different species and that kind of stuff, different planets and stuff. So that's kind of sort of where the episode ends.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Tim. I think this was the starter kit for understand a starship, understand the Federation, understand the dangers, all that stuff. It was definitely, this one felt a lot more, I mean,
expositional.
I mean, it did. It felt like very much exposition for people who were not necessarily part of this before, you know, the younger audience they're trying to attract with this series. It made sense to do this, absolutely. But I think for all of us, I think, you know, the sort of the candy of this one is just, you know, we get to know a little bit about the characters, the way they interact. You know, it's funny because obviously, you know, this is episode 3, theoretically it's 2, I mean, the two-part starter. So we're just starting to get the note of the characters, but right now they're really leaning into the superficiality of the characters. You know, Dal is self-centered and arrogant. Gwyn is sullen and, you know, untrusting. Jenkin Pog is a slob and, you know, a clown. Zero is condescending and a bit obtuse. You know, and Rock is you know, lacking in confidence and clearly sort of trying to find her own. So they sort of give you these very sort of superficial views of these characters. And Janeway, the hologram of Janeway, comes along, is extremely smug. I mean, she's even got the coffee cup and everything. Like, she was not coming off as the best version of herself, you know. But yeah, it was a little bit on the nose, but I think you're going to get those episodes with this series. I think they are going to have to, you know, I think hardcore Trek fans are going to have to sort of just accept that there's going to have to be these episodes that are really about, you know, the starter kit for Star Trek, right?
Well, but they did leave some things hanging for us, right? I mean, like, they left the what is this dome power generator thingy, whatever, in the engineering area. They didn't answer that.
Yeah,
right?
There's two warp cores. What's that thing in the middle? It's a good stage setter.
Yeah, and then also the idea of a vehicle replicator sort of leaves things open for future sort of coolness, right? So something we didn't have in previous Star Treks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw some interesting criticisms online where people were like, well, you know, like Dal in particular, like, as being too extreme of a character for like a Star Trek show. And I'm like, guys, it's a kid's version, right?
Yeah.
Like, think about like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. What's, you know, what's Raphael's deal? Oh, he's the moody, sassy one. What's Donatello's deal? Oh, he's completely obsessed with science and machines and stuff, right? Like, you create these extreme versions of characters because the shades of gray aren't exactly picked up on by kids, right? They need something like, that's the bad one, that's the good one. I think there's more layers to this story than, you know, I think little kids will get, but it still needs to be addressable at some point and understandable by them, right? You can't just have stuff be, well, you know, it was the acting choice. It was in that glance that we knew. It was like, no, they kind of need to straight up say stuff. Otherwise, kids aren't going to get it.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. That's, I mean, it's a good show. I mean, like, it's not, it's, you know, it's kind of like there's the jokes in there for the adults, like the Mulgrew coffee cup, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and but yet there's the you know, the cute little 8-year-old giant rock creature, mm-hmm. you know? Who you know, can hold her own in a tussle. Like, she's not, you know, a pushover in that sense, right? And she's also the gullible, naive character too, that doesn't understand why things are the way they are, why, you know, the world has to be the way it is. And, you know, she likes her meal. I mean, you know, do we know anybody, Jonathan, in our lives who will eat basically three foods?
Yeah, you know? we might.
And are they not 6 foot tall as well?
6'3", as a matter of fact.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah, so these are clearly, I mean, I don't know if it's dumbed down enough. I mean, it's definitely sort of a YTV, Teletoon kind of Nickelodeon kind of show, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this one, it's funny because I think the first comparison that I drew, just seeing the production art, the trailers and stuff like that, I felt Clone Wars was it, but it does even seem skewing younger than that. just because all the characters are supposed to be young, they're all learning themselves, their interactions, you know, it definitely does skew pretty young. And, you know, I think, again, the hardcore Trek fans, the people who are really way into Trek, will find the things of Trek that they like. Again, there was, you know, I was looking at this show at times today thinking, well, it's kind of fun. In the same way that the original Trek animated series could go some places that the traditional Trek couldn't. This one, obviously, we're in an era where you can do a lot of cool stuff with CG, but there's a budget limitation. In animation, again, like some of the effects when the Protostar was going through and trying to sort of get out of the sun's, you know, gravitational well and stuff like that. Like the effects are really cool and the animation's really, really interesting. Even the visual effect when you say the Diviner's ship takes off from the mining colony and, you know, goes into cloak. It's really cool. And it's just not a visual that we've seen before in Star Trek. So I think there's going to be lots of stuff for the tried and true Trek fan to sort of find and really enjoy with this. But you do have to always keep it in front of your mind that it's really not for us.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, the day I met Jaime, I also met another guy named Jonathan Penn, who works for Apple now, but he gave a talk once at NS North that Jaime and I attended, and it was basically Star Wars themed, right? And the most interesting thing about it was, you know, he was talking to his young daughter about her, you know, who's her favorite character in Star Wars. And he thought it might be, you know, Amidala or Princess Leia or something like that. And she said, Emperor Palpatine.
Huh.
Because he can make lightning come out of his fingertips.
Yeah, sure.
I remember that talk.
You know?
Who hasn't wanted to have lightning come out of your fingertips?
Exactly. So to an eight-year-old kid, it's not, you know, Janeway has a coffee cup and is like, you know, the leader of the pack. And, you know, like we all have reverence for Janeway. And, you know, we have reverence for Tuvok and Spock and that. But a kid might like Neelix. We don't know, right? Somebody's got to like Neelix.
You know, and again, it's Jar Jar Binks syndrome, right? You know, we look at Jar Jar and we're like, geez, what a stupid character. But there are kids who were little when that movie came out who were like, Jar Jar is my jam.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, they don't understand why Han Solo is so grumpy all the time, right?
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah.
That's like my grandpa. Why would I want to follow him, you know?
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah.
Not that I'm like that.
no, never.
Get off my lawn.
Never.
Yeah. I think it's a good start. But yeah, like you said, like of course I watched it with the stereo home pods today, and it was quite nice and nice and loud, and had the good soundtrack. And it's funny because, you know, like we've talked about the opening credit scene, and I can't remember if they do this in Discovery and in Picard as well, but, you know, they have this sort of news theme song. I think they do it in Lower Decks as well. They have the main theme go and big horns and violins and stuff like that. And at the very end, it just kind of all collapses down into the, you know, the opening notes from Alexander Courage's theme for Star Trek, right? So,
yeah, I think everybody puts their own spin on it, but then it all comes back to the source, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Which is, to us, that's like the ping, you know? So we know that sound. That's the sound of the TARDIS, you know, landing is another familiar sound that people are attuned to, right? So, All right, do we want to move on? So we've all seen Dune now.
Yeah. Oh, we have.
We saw it on the big screen. Jaime saw it on the little postage stamp screen.
Whereas yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful on my home screen. So describe as best you can what it was like on the IMAX.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it as we were coming out that, you know, Denis Villeneuve makes beautiful films. Just an absolute master at painting canvases. And, you know, I gotta admit, confession time, I've been extremely envious of Jaime. As much as he busts our chops about the socialized sci-fi here, this HBO Max same day premiere thing this year has made me very, very envious, because you've got to watch like all these great movies as soon as they are available, and we don't have a choice. It's either go to the theater or don't. But then when Xavier and Tim and I went to go see Dune last week, I was like, yeah, no, this is better. This is so much better. I wouldn't have wanted to have had this be my first experience with this vision on a smaller screen. That being said, so there was a few times where it was like, I kind of would have liked to be a little bit further removed from it or on a TV just so I could process a little bit, because there was some scenes, especially there's a one scene again where we'll try not to get too far into spoilers on this one, but there's one scene where there's an attack and it's very dark, it's at nighttime. There's a few times where I was like, yeah, you know, some of this could be better on a television set, but the vision of the different planets, the uniqueness of the settings, the ships, the clothing, the weapons, like all of it was just so just so and just so unique and such a vision that, you know, I know we all, I think, really enjoyed Blade Runner 2049. It was not a huge commercial success, but it certainly was a critical success. And I think everyone realized in that moment that, you know, we were kind of dealing with sort of a modern master of his craft, and boy, it looks so good in IMAX, and you know, some of the sound effects and stuff like that were really, really neat in a theater environment. It was one of those moments where I was just like, oh, thank goodness we can do this again.
Yeah, and it was a bit like, you know, the palace or whatever it is that they're living in, you know, in the opening scenes, or the scene where the one character gets attacked, the father gets attacked, right? And he's kind of like lying there in the middle of this big giant hallway, like that kind of scale, like it's similar to the home world that Thor came from, right? But you get a real sense of scale, and that's something that Villeneuve is really good at, is to be able to sort of portray, like he does that with Vegas in Blade Runner 2049, he has that same sort of scale and you know, large vastness to it. And I mean, his portrayal of spaceships and tools and things like that, I mean, like they're not your conventional kind of stuff. I mean, they're not like, you know, typical Star Wars or Star Trek kind of, you know, clean lines and things like that. It did actually look pretty believable from that point of view. And a lot of interesting politics and some characters. Sarsgaard was unrecognizable until he opened his mouth.
Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård playing Harkonnen. Yeah, Baron Harkonnen. Was very cool.
So it was interesting. I'd love to hear what Mark Rubin has to say about it. He's a huge Dune fan, right? So I'm kind of curious what he thinks about this, because I noticed, having just reread the book recently, that there seemed to be a little bit of playing with the timeline, and I was a little surprised to find that this is sort of part one. It does say part one right on the tin, right? But you find that at the beginning of the movie, but Jonathan was telling me that they this is the first swipe at it, and they don't know, depending on how this one does, whether they'll do a second, right?
Yeah, they've confirmed it since then that they're going to make a second one, so we know that's coming. The real question is, and I think somebody put it to Villeneuve. I read a piece this week where they were saying, you know, so Dune is obviously, it's not just one story. It is it's a millennia spanning story that took place over a long period of time. Herbert wrote, I think, seven different books, plus his son and Kevin Anderson wrote a bunch more after his death, to try and sort of wrap up the story based on Frank Herbert's notes. And I think it will be interesting to see if this is, you know, something that they continue. Now, the other benefit of this one is that, you know, they can take it now that they have HBO Max. They don't have to do it all in the theater too. You know, they can go back and they can tell backstories and stuff like that, and tell, you know, limited series that talk about, you know, the Bene Gesserit, you know, religion and some of the backstory and stuff like that. Like, they can really kind of go different places. And that to me sounds really interesting. If you could have something that's kind of Disney Plus esque, where you can kind of tell other stories within the same universe, and then you don't have to watch them, but it certainly adds to the flavor of the experience. I think that would be a really interesting way for them to go with this very rich world that he's sort of kicked off here.
Definitely cool.
Jaime, so now that we can talk openly about it, what were some of the highlights and things in your experience? Obviously, you'd had a different experience watching it at home as the premiere.
Yeah, I enjoyed how it brought in that... It's like a Muslim Arabic aesthetic that I feel comes in much more strongly in this. And I'm not familiar with the source material. I've not read the books. But comparing this mentally to what you get out of the David Lynch film, I'm like, oh, I never really got the cultural aspect
like this. So I don't know if that's an add-on or bringing back in something that was in the original source material. Do y'all know?
Yeah, Tim, I think you could probably speak to it having read it recently, but my understanding is that even in the time, it was definitely, there was a correlation between the relationship between the book and its sort of pseudo references to Islam and in the moment.
Yeah, that's a question for Mark. I really don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really cue into those kind of things, but yeah, I have heard sort of things like that, you know? But yeah, I mean, to me, it's just a different thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't really make those kind of associations myself, right? Unless it's blatant.
Yeah.
I see. The one thing that's a little weird, besides the, Thanos wins at the end kind of ending it has, because this is the first part of a two-parter, right? The other thing I found kind of strange was, you know, there's a lot of hype for Zendaya, but she's like barely in the movie.
Yeah.
As an actual character, premonition, I suppose. From her part, I'm like, man, I sure hope they make a part two, because she's barely in this movie, considering how heavily portrayed she was in the
lead up.
Yeah. I also liked Jason Momoa, big fan, so loved his character, loved his take on things.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen him shaved since he was on Stargate, right? I almost I recognize him, but I didn't recognize him because he usually has that, you know, with the whole beard and mustache thing going, right?
Yeah, he was. It's funny. I was thinking about it afterwards and thinking about, like, you know, this is pretty impressive cast that they put together for this first movie. And again, not to get too spoiler heavy, but, you know, I think, you know, in some cases those characters were really, you know, they knew that their characters were not, you know, and I won't mention which ones, but certainly some of the characters were not long for the story. And I think that, you know, again, you bring in Oscar Isaacs, you bring in him, you bring in, you know, some of these really great actors, and you kind of just let them cook for a while. And then, you know, they know that they're just there for, you know, half a movie or one movie, and they're not committed to doing an ongoing storyline. But, you know, it's arguably the most star-studded cast that Villeneuve's ever worked with, and, you know, and I think he kind of lets them all shine in their moments. You know, Oscar Isaacs has some really nice scenes. You know, Momoa has some really nice scenes. Even some of the supporting actors, you know, there's some really nice moments. I will say, so Tim, I think you mentioned in the moment, you were like, this is my first Chalamet. And I was like, yeah, I think it's mine too. I don't think I'd seen anything with him previously. But, you know, he certainly has been a name that's been on the rise the past few years. I know, and obviously because he's a very handsome young man, but beyond that, because people see him as a very talented actor.
Oh, that's true. I know. I saw Lady Bird. He was in that one.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I did see that too.
Okay.
That's true.
That's why he looked familiar. Yeah. I was like, I'm pretty sure. It says here Interstellar. A young Tom Cooper.
Oh.
Oh, he was also in, looks like he was also in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Call Me by Your Name is the big movie.
Yeah, that's the one that everyone talked about, but I have not had an opportunity to watch that yet, or not made an opportunity, but he's definitely, you know, he is the center. I mean, he's full face on an IMAX screen for a long stretch of this movie, and he carries it well. Like, he's certainly there, although, you know, I think you're right, Jaime. I think it's one of those ones where, you know, you were expecting, based on the billing of the movie, that Zendaya would be a much more prominent character. I'm led to understand by reading this last week, to sort of follow up on it, that the second movie is going to sort of cast her in a much stronger protagonist role, almost to the point of being like, she'll be the star and he'll be the kind of secondary character to whom things are happening. So hopefully we'll see more of her, because I think she's a really, really talented actor too. So, but yeah, I think it's an interesting first start, although some of the criticism I've seen online has been centered around the fact that, you know, it doesn't end satisfactorily. It's very much a part one. It kind of feels like Fellowship of the Ring, where you're like, and they started walking that way, come back in 2 years and we'll tell you which way they went, you know? I can say that, you know, as a, you know, I don't need a lot of, I don't think the movie needed more pew, pew, pew. I don't think it needed a big, you know, like Marvel, you know, some of the criticism of the Marvel movies is that the formula is so strong with them, you know, first act, second act, third act is always the pew, pew, pew. It was, you know, very much true of the last of Shang-Chi. It's very much true of all their movies that, you know, things blow up good in the third act. They don't really have a good recipe for not doing that. As a matter of fact, that's what made Loki so damn good, was that they didn't need to do that at the end. In this case, it was I don't want to say unsatisfying, because I think it was certainly I really didn't have a lot of nitpicks with the movie, but there really was no zenith of the film. It never really felt like there was building to a crescendo. It kind of, I guess the big attack scene, but that's sort of more to that's 2 hours into a 3-hour movie, and then it just sort of does its thing towards the end and just sort of winds down, and then we all went home. It didn't necessarily end on the kind of up note where I'm damn, I can't wait to get back to it. I can't wait to get back to it because the vision was so beautiful and the performances were strong, and and I enjoyed the world building that they did, but it wasn't I can't wait to see what happens with the character. It just didn't leave me as tantalized, I think, as some blockbuster type movies do.
Right. And what I said too was that the one thing that I found interesting about the way they portray the story here is they kind of have an impression that they know who Paul Atreides is, right? Mm. Whereas in the book, his mother and him, even though he has there's something about him, he has some magnetism around him, the people he's living with on the planet don't really know, in the caves and stuff like that, they don't really know that who he is, that he's the Duke or future Duke or whatever. That he's got this nobility around him. I think he just carries himself that way. Cause I mean, he's portrayed in this story, a young king to be kind of would be done, where he's trained, the Jason Momoa character is his personal trainer and, good friend and confidant, and mm-hmm. and Thanos guy, what's his name again? Brolin.
Yeah,
Josh Brolin. Yeah, he sort of takes over too as a sort of trainer for him, and they have these interesting personal armors that they use. But the whole thing about the mother and the son, they're kind of taken in by the people of the planet and kind of helped and protected and stuff as they go through the story. But my problem was that in this movie, in the portrayal, they seemed to know who they were, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, because I think the leader guy met them in court and when they first
Javier Bardem, a nice speaking of killer casting, holy moly.
Yeah. So that may be, I don't know, for me, that was an interesting sort of rewrite, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious what the real, diehard Frank Herbert fans think about that too, or if I even remember it correctly. But
yeah.
By the way, Timothy Chalamet played the young son in Interstellar as well. So we have seen him
before.
Don't
remember that, but yeah, no, and again, he certainly
played Murph's brother.
He's been on the rise for sure. I think it's interesting, and I think it's well done. I think, it'll be interesting to see where they go with this universe, if this is world building to be continued beyond just a next movie, or if this is just, one, two, and they're done.
Yeah, for sure.
Another quick shout out. Rebecca Ferguson, who played his mom in the movie, was amazing. I hadn't seen her much other that I could recall. But she was a revelation. She was such a great actress. Yeah. I really enjoyed her.
I think for me, the way that I look at this film, because people are talking about it online, is hey, it's 2.5 hours. It's only the first part. It feels like the same sort of epic story, 1956 movie, The Ten Commandments, starring Charlton Heston and Yul Brynner. I looked at the runtime. That movie is 3 hours and 40 minutes. It takes an entire evening to watch that when it inevitably... I don't know if they do this in Canada, but here in the U.S., I think they show this around Easter time, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely epic. I mean, the Ten Commandments is literally biblical, right? And I get the same sort of epic biblical feeling out of this movie and how it's presented. So I think the pew, pew, pew. Let me tell you, you watch the Ten Commandments, stuff happens, but it's not pew, pew, pew all the time, right? So I mm-hmm. think that's where I sort of take a different approach to this one. And I think it's interesting. Yeah. I'd recommend it.
Yeah, it did feel like it was longer than 2.5 hours, though. Like it did feel like a long movie to me.
Yeah,
like,
it's 2:35. And worth stating, it's obviously we've talked about, is the atmosphere right? Are people, we talked about the sort of litmus test of these movies, is it time for people to get back to the theater? Obviously, depending on where you are and what the circumstances are with the global pandemic, but it's made $300 million worldwide already.
Well, it's interesting you raise that, because that was my one criticism about the experience of seeing this in the theater, was I was not comfortable with the people around us.
Well, it didn't help that the guys behind us wouldn't shut the hell up, but...
And they weren't wearing masks and, you know.
Yeah.
And they're high school kids going to school, and who knows what they're picking up there. And,
yeah, and... I don't know. I mean, it's a tricky one, because obviously, here in Ontario, you have to show your proof of vaccination in order to just even step into the building before you can even show your tickets to get in. So that's a confidence building thing for sure, but it's a funny one, because you can go in and the rules basically say, while you're eating and drinking, you can have your mask off. And I think people take that to mean, oh, I can just take my mask off because I've got a drink here sitting next to me. But I know that, I was eating my popcorn, and when I finished my popcorn, I looked to my right and you were sitting there and you had put your mask back on because you had finished eating your snack. And I was like, that's a great idea. I'm going to put my mask back on. And Xavier did the exact same thing, taking his cue from the two of us. But I would say we were in the vast minority of people wearing their masks while just sitting there watching the movie. That being said, we were talking about it as we were coming out. We were like, that was, really cool to be back in there. And obviously, seeing a movie like that in the theaters, we were talking about, well, what else is coming out this fall that we really are going to make an effort to go see in the theater? We talked about going and seeing, of course, Eternals, which is coming out this weekend. We talked about seeing Spider-Man. We talked about seeing The Matrix, which we saw the trailer for on the IMAX screen and looked pretty damned impressive. And, there's still a good 4 or 5 movies coming up between now and the end of the year that are theoretically ones that you'd want to see in the theater. The new Ghostbusters Afterlife is coming. There are James Bond we haven't seen yet. It's tough because, I think all of us are big movie buffs. All of us want to have the best possible experience. And beyond that here, they've really have cracked down on your ability to do anything else. It's not like in the States right now where you do have the option to watch it on HBO Max and stuff. Here, you don't have that. I really do want to see those other 4 or 5 movies, but it's you have to sort of push past that still very ingrained suspicion, apprehension. Like, it really is a mental hurdle.
Yeah, definitely. Look, there's another Dune movie, a miniseries.
Yeah, they did one on TV like 10 or 12 years ago.
Really?
I think it was, didn't they do an adaptation of Children, didn't they?
I don't know.
I vaguely remember seeing something. I don't know if it was a miniseries, TV show, or movie or something that takes place after the Dune story with Paul Atreides as Muad'Dib wandering the desert or something.
Yeah, 3-part miniseries in the year 2000. I just gave it a look up. Yeah, Children of Dune, it says. Yeah, I must admit, I never watched that one. Dune, again, even the original, I think David Lynch is a really interesting filmmaker, but it's kind of a weird movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the best. It certainly has its vision, but it's not the best.
Yeah.
Very much of its time, Sting acting, sort of.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah. Well, good. I was looking to see on my IMDb app if they have what's coming soon, but they don't have that, strangely enough.
Mm.
They've got what to watch and they've got top picks, but they don't have what's coming out, which is odd.
Mm.
All right. Yeah, they keep changing their formula on their app. What can you do? Alrighty, well, let's move on to our watch list, and I don't have much, so you can go ahead, honey.
Yeah, I felt it was timely and appropriate to bring up janewaystatue.com. So this is a, for realsie, they've made a monument to the upcoming birth of Captain Catherine Janeway in Bloomington, Indiana. So kind of, I guess, along the same vein as the Rocky statue that's in Philadelphia and the RoboCop one that's in Detroit.
Bronze Fawns in Milwaukee.
Bronze Fawns in Milwaukee.
Gretzky statue in Edmonton, yeah.
Yeah. So they've got the dedication
the
there.
And the Frank Zappa statue in Baltimore.
So there's a Superman one in Kansas, too, isn't there?
Is there?
Yeah.
So that's the idea. She's from Bloomington, Indiana. Is that the...
Yeah, it's the dedication here is connection? Future birthplace of Captain Catherine Janeway, Bloomington,
oh,
Indiana,
really?
Earth, May... I can't read the plaque. Is it May 20th or May 28th? I can't read that.
Wow. What year is it?
2336.
It's going to say a couple years away, like 300?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, and they've got a little YouTube video of the unveiling and dedication. They got Kate Mulgrew via Zoom because this is all during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Some dedication from Robert Picardo, who played the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's cool. It's fun. If you're in that neck of the woods, you know, you should probably go check it out, take a photo.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like, I kind of wonder what people are going to think 200 years from now when they see that statue.
I was just thinking, hey, somebody down in Bloomington should change the family name to Janeway and just start the line and, eventually destined to be born.
You don't think there's an actual clan of Janeway somewhere?
It's entirely possible. I couldn't say.
Yeah.
I must admit, in all my travels, I've never met a Janeway.
I'm sure if you look it up, you probably can.
Yeah.
Chakotay might be a long stretch, but.
Well, you know, go find a place for indigenous people. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got a couple of things for the watch list. I've got Blade Runner Black Lotus, which is coming up next week. That is the new Adult Swim / Crunchyroll series that is focused on the Blade Runner world. I can't recall if we talked about this one back when the trailer started coming out. The trailer came out in the summertime, I think when we were on our hiatus. And it looks really good. It looks very much of that Blade Runner world. This is only the third thing set in the Blade Runner universe. We really haven't, for all the different things that we've seen over the years that have been, you know, splashed all over the place. Star Trek's gone a million different directions. Star Wars, all these different franchises, all the comic book universes and everything else. As beloved as Blade Runner is, there really has only just been the two movies. And, you know, there's obviously been spin-off books and things like that. This is sort of that first sort of look back into the different media. So I think...
But keep in mind that Blade Runner was a sort of almost a cult fave for a long time, because, I mean, it was sort of the... It was sort of... I think it came... Was it after Indiana Jones?
I want to say after.
Because it was kind of a sort of a, let's get Harrison Ford off the ground here, right? And you know, typical Hollywood, he was a sci-fi actor, so let's put him in a sci-fi vehicle. Blade Runner, I don't think it was really well accepted by a lot of people. I mean, like you know, star sci-fi nuts were crazy about it, right? You know, I've loved it ever since I first saw it. But for the longest time, it was sort of not something that you know, was in the lexicon of most people.
No, it's fair. And honestly, I don't think it really is either for people now. I still think it's a bit of a niche sci-fi project, but I think that brings us back to why this is only the third one, right? But yeah, this one seems to focus around the character of the Black Lotus. Black Lotus is theoretically a replicant and theoretically on the run, if you watch this trailer. And this story sort of centers around her. And yeah, it looks really cool. It looks very much of that universe, but obviously with the sort of anime kind of feel to it. And yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out. It's a mini series. I think it's 12 or 14 episodes or something like that. So yeah, definitely worth a look. I recommend checking out the trailer and you can check it out on November 14th on Adult Swim, both here and the US and in Canada. So. Cool. And the last thing I've got on here, and I put it on here even though I'm not watching it, Supergirl is doing a two-part finale on Tuesday. So Tuesday works out to be the 8th, the 9th. 9th. 9th mm-hmm. of November is doing its two-part swan song. And I don't say that disparagingly. I like that show very much. But what I'm saying is I have been way off on following up with the season because they broke it into parts. And so I'm like 10 episodes behind.
You're also busy on Tuesday.
Yes, Tuesday. We have plans for Tuesday. But anyways... yeah, I'm definitely going to put this on my PVR as I have for the last, you know, number of episodes, and I will sit down and binge the whole thing. Even without knowing the circumstances of these final few episodes, I do find it bittersweet. I do think this series was really, really good. I think as far as, you know, storytelling, as far as, I think you have to absolutely put your hands together for them on the level of representation that they had on this show, the amount of female, strong female characters. They had, you know, a very prominent trans character. They've really interesting stories about, you know, people coming out, being queer. And And you know, I felt a lot of love for the characters over the years. So I will be sad to see it go. But obviously, you know, to all things, there must be an end. So c'est la vie.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I guess I do have a pick. My pick is Clerk, which is the Kevin Smith documentary that you and I are going to go see on Tuesday and then see Kevin Smith talk after the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's happening next week for us. And that's it. So I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, how will they find you?
You can always find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's at JPK News.
And hi, man, if people want to get in touch with you.
I'm on Twitter. It's at Dev with the Hair.
All right. My name is Tim Mitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Twitter machine is where you'll find me. And so until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Where's my cake?
To cut the cake.
It's also Carol's birthday. We should have had cake. Oh, well.
Well, that's on you, man. You're there.
Well, we had pizza. She got her presents today. She got her new HomePod minis. I had Quinn help me wrap the presents yesterday. So, of course, by the time I got up this morning, they were all opened.
Yeah.
You know, so she was explaining to me how she wraps presents. So I said, okay, fine. I just handed her tape. Here's another piece of tape.
Nice.
27 pieces of tape later.
Yeah, that's okay. I still rap like that, and I'm not a 6-year-old, so.
Yeah, well, I use 3 pieces of tape when I rap stuff. Mm.
That's my dream. I someday aspire to get to that point.
Yeah, well, I tried to show her this is how my grandfather used to wrap presents, and she just didn't care.
Yeah. Yep.
Kids, what are you going to do?
It's like they're a whole different generation.
I know, eh?
What's up with that?
I don't know. I'm sure I don't know, as my mother would say. Yeah. Oh, and we didn't talk about Paw Patrol.
Paw Patrol?
Were we supposed to?
The news that there's a sequel to both Dune and Paw Patrol slated for the future. Yeah.
So what are we going to show? Dune 2 and Paw Patrol 2 both release in October 2023. So they're like
Worlds collide.
And one of our fans said one is set in a complex universe full of politics, scheming, and intrigue, and the other is Dune.
Yes, I did see that post.
Yeah. It's all good, man.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a friend of mine posted a picture of Worcestershire sauce, because we all have different pronunciations of Worcestershire. Marcus convinces Worcester, because that's, you know, the Worcester, Massachusetts, where Kevin can F himself is from, right? So.
Yep.
So one of our English fans said Worcestershire.
Worcestershire.
Worcestershire. And I asked Carol, and she said that Worcestershire is how she said it. So yep.
I that was my one note on the Doctor Who episode. Is I'm so happy that they named the season is called Doctor Who Flux. Flux is the sort of big bad mystery thing of this season. Mm. I love that they made a Yorkshire woman have to say flux over and over again. She kept saying flux. And I'm like, I can't help but think someone in the writing room was like, let's call it the Flux. It'll be the funniest part of the season, having to have Jodie Whittaker with her thick Yorkshire accent having to say flux.
Yeah. Well, Diaz has quite a bit of accent too. Is it same?
Yes, they're both Northerners. Yeah,
because I'm just trying to pull up the
Yeah, because they were busting the people about, like she said she's from Sheffield or something, right? Mm. But yeah, because the in the episode they are talking with somebody who's from Liverpool, and at one point he makes a crack.
Liverpool,
about that.
Yeah, that's the new character.
Yeah,
just gonna get his name and actor. He's been in a few things before. I'm sure I remember where, of course, IMDb lists like the problem with IMDb is it lists Doctor Who, but it lists every single season of Doctor Who. So of course there's like 200 episodes since it came back out.
Awesome.
Are we in season 13? Yeah, we are. Let's see here. The Halloween Apocalypse. John Bishop plays Dan Lewis.
Right.
Yeah, he's the Liverpudlian, I guess. Is he really from Liverpool? Let's see.
He does a pretty good Liverpool accent if he's not.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. Why would you fake that, right?
Yeah, okay. That was, not a huge spoiler, but the joke that at one point in the episode, the doctor is trying to activate something that's voice activated, and she keeps saying the word over and over again, and then she's like, oh, maybe I had a Scottish accent when I when I said it. So she starts trying to do a Scottish accent
because she's trying to do Capaldi, right?
Because she's trying to do Capaldi. That was very funny. That was like a really nice, like, little nod to the way the doctor works, right? Like that made me laugh. I was like,
so here's a little bit of trivia for the number one fan of the show. Did you know that John Bishop was once worked briefly as a door-to-door salesman selling Kirby vacuum cleaners?
Kirby vacuum cleaners.
I know, eh? He just went up a notch in Xavier's eyes.
No kidding. Sure. Yeah, we just got a new fan right there.
Yeah. Has he watched Doctor Who?
He has watched a bit of Doctor Who. I would not say he is thoroughly invested.
I see.
But, you know, in time. Yeah. I think we were talking about that the other day. We were talking about shows that we've watched and things that I watched that he would like. And we're sort of going back and forth. He's like, I am just going to sit down one of these days and make a list. And it's not I want to accomplish these in the next year list. It's a in my lifetime, I intend to watch list.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I have one of those too. Unfortunately, they keep making more, the buggers. So every time I add something to the list, I'm like, oh, but there's this other thing.
You guys definitely got to get on this Letterboxd app that I'm on because, you know, you can, I've basically gone through and listed just about every movie I can remember ever watching.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's like I had to really dig deep to, you know, I even went to my next Netflix history and stuff like that to try and find some of the shows that I don't remember. But yeah, because I remember like the first movie I saw in Canada, first movie I saw on the drive through, and then I must have gone to see it like a ton of movies in when I was like 12, 13, 14 years old before I lived in St. Catharines, because we used to just go on Saturday, mom would give us money and we'd go off and watch movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like, plus all the stuff I've seen on TV over the years and stuff like that. So, and there's a number of people that I got turned onto it by a friend at work who used to go to TIFF every year, right?
Yeah.
And so it's quite an interesting little sort of, you know, you can follow people and see what they like. And of course, you know, it's got a whole, you know, social networky kind of thing to it, right? But it'd be interesting to sort of see, like, you know, what movies you've seen that I, because you used to rent movies all the time when you were a kid, right? Teenager? Oh,
I can't even... Honestly, I feel like that would be a separate hobby if I started doing that at this point.
Yeah,
if I started writing down all the shows and TV shows. Again, I was left alone a lot as a kid to my own devices. And yeah, I watched movies like all the time. I watched, you know, a ton of stuff. And I was lucky enough that mine was the first generation that had a VCR in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could, you know, you could rent movies, you could record things off TV and rewatch them. You can, you know, trade things back and forth with your friends who recorded things.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate. I mean, although that being said, I've told Xavier, like, I am so deeply envious of this world of convenience that they are born into where, you know, at their fingertips, every TV show, every movie, you know, like, I'm genuinely surprised when I'm like, I can't find this movie online.
Yeah.
In a non, you know, obviously a lot of stuff you can still purchase, but there's a handful of movies. I've been slowly reducing my physical media collection. And by reducing, I mean, like, I've been putting them into Rubbermaid containers. So I'm not ready to part with everything yet. But as I replace things with either a digital file or a digital copy or something, I will archive the old stuff if I don't feel like I'm going to watch it in that medium, especially DVDs and stuff like that, where the quality is not quite as high.
Mm-hmm.
But the number of things that are not available anywhere now are pretty small. Like there's certainly, I mean, there's, you know, obviously there's millions of hours of produced content out there that have been produced in history. But there's, you know, I'm genuinely impressed with the amount of stuff that you can find if you go looking for it. That being said, there's some stuff that I, you know, some of my favorite stuff that, you know, is very slow leaking out. One of my favorite movies from my teen years was Christian Slater's Pump Up the Volume. And
that
movie just hit me. I think I was like 15 or something when it came out. And it just hit me like right in that sweet spot of, you know, having somebody talk about how messed up high school is and how hard it is to be a teenager and stuff just hit me right exactly where I lived. And I loved that movie. And it wasn't available outside of VHS and DVD until this year.
Really?
Like, it doesn't exist digitally. It's not on any streaming services. It just came to Blu-ray this year. Mm-hmm. And even then, it's only, you have to like order it online. It's like, it's quite expensive. It will be on my Christmas list this year. But it, you know, it's a strange one too, because it is in the exact wrong place in history, because it came out in like the early 90s, right before the internet. And it's about a guy who like takes to the airwaves and creates this pirate radio show and is trying to connect with these kids who are feeling alienated. But within like 2 years of that, we had the internet and all these kids could like jump online and create, you know, content and write a blog and the whole dynamic changed. So that movie does not hold up terribly well for another generation, in spite of the fact that it has all these poignant things to say about being a teenager and life and, you know, friendship and you know, all that other stuff. It just kind of got lost in history just because of when it came out. But yeah, it's fun to see what they will and won't release as far as a digital copy or as far as a, you know, a Blu-ray copy, or as far as a 4K copy, or, you know, get out there. Is there anything out there where you're like, I really would love to see this again? I wonder if it's out there. Do you fall down that rabbit hole sometimes?
Yeah, I'm sure there is over the years. There's a lot of things that I would have seen or heard or records or whatever that are no longer around. Like, it's funny, I bought a Triumvirate LP. I should bring it to your house because I don't really play records here. But I bought it because that's a progressive rock band that from Europe somewhere. And they exist online. There's stuff about them, but they're not on Apple Music. They're not on, you know, there's nothing really there, but they had a couple of seminal albums that just about everybody had. Right. And then, I didn't personally have them, but, you know, so anyway, so I picked that up. That's one sort of weird thing. I tend to, you know, it's funny. I watch a lot of Turner Classic Movies, right? Like I have that on my rotation as I go flipping by on channels. And occasionally I'll stop and watch a movie there. Like, they have some really good, like, you know, Oscar, they do like around Oscar week, they have, or up to Oscar week for about a month, they have all these different movies. And of course they had some around Halloween just recently, not the typical Halloween stuff you expect, like, you know, Michael Myers and that kind of stuff. But actually one kid showed up dressed as Michael Myers on Halloween, and Mac, my dog, just looked at him and went, "What the hell are you?" Oh, and one of the funniest costumes I saw, that I was waiting for these kids to come around, but they were out there with their father, and they were running around with, they had these Home Depot buckets on their head, like the 5-gallon buckets, and they had tunics. They were the Knights of Neat.
That's
but
funny.
I saw them on the corner, but they didn't come over to my house, so I would definitely have taken a picture of those kids. But yeah, it was hilarious. Like the fact that three kids all went as the Knights of Neat, right?
Nice.
So, yeah, I didn't see what the father was dressed as. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, I've forgotten movies that I've watched, you know, when I was a kid, and haven't seen them before. Like one of the things I do have is, like, I did get The Journey to the Far Side of the Sun, which I didn't realize at the time when I saw it that it's actually a Gerry Anderson movie, right? It's like right after Thunderbirds and all, you know, Stingray and all those kind of things. This was an actual people in the movie as opposed to marionettes, right? So
yeah. Yeah.
Done in what do they call it? Not Jerry. Super Marionation is what he used to call it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And, you know, I did finally get the Thunderbirds. I watched Thunderbirds in Batman when I was a kid, like 6 years old. But I finally got the box out of it, and then I never even sat down and watched it.
Oh well. Sometimes it just comforts you to know that it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're a little bit younger than both of us. Is there? Do you feel like the things that you're wistful for are at your fingertips?
I think so, but I will definitely take a mental note to keep track of anything that I'm like, oh, let me try finding this, and then I discover I can't find it even on something like YouTube, right? I'm kind of curious about this now.
Yeah, I find it interesting too. Like, some stuff you know, you don't think about it. This is the part that people kind of lose track of. I think maybe we talked about this a couple of years ago, but, you know, just because something's on a service doesn't mean it stays on a service. So you don't own it. It's just, it's there as long as it's there, but then the contract may expire and you don't have it anymore. But even things like iTunes, I think people have this vision of, well, if I bought it on iTunes, I'll have it forever. And that's true if you remember to download it and save it to your hard drive, but that's not always true if you don't. There's a TV series called Extras. I don't know if you remember that one, Tim, with Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, I've only watched a few episodes, yeah.
Which I really enjoyed that series. I own the DVD box set of it, which I bought just because it was the thing that Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant did after the original British Office. And it's about Ricky Gervais plays this guy who is an extra in all these movies. And it's about him just sort of advancing his career. It's only 13 episodes. It's a very, very... good series. He's terrific in it. Stephen Merchant, I love it. I think he's hilarious and of course a great writer. It was available for a while on iTunes, but it isn't anymore. And so I see it in my iTunes library as, you know, like I have it downloaded, but you can't go back and purchase it now. It's like it doesn't exist, which is, you know, of course, this is going to happen over time. People are going to lose the rights to things. They'll have limited term contracts. These things aren't in perpetuity. I think people forget that.
Yeah.
But it's the series, for what it's worth, if you get a chance to watch it, each episode has a pretty famous movie star as the star of the movie in which he's an extra. So, you know, it's a bit of its time. It's from like, you know, 2005, 2006. But like Kate Winslet at like the peak of her power, Sam Jackson, yeah. Patrick Stewart, Daniel Radcliffe, you know, all these different people are in the show as, but playing like these hyper realistic versions of themselves. It is so
he's funny. Like Gervais is an extra in the movie. Is that the idea?
He's supposed to be an extra in their movies.
Right. Yeah.
Then as this is going on, he actually starts to like get slightly bigger parts. And then he sort of, it's about him sort of, how he chooses to as his career starts advancing, how he starts to treat his friends and all this stuff. So it's good. But like David Bowie's in an episode as himself and like it's really, really good. But again, you short of finding the DVD box set, I don't know where you have to go to find it now.
Oh, you mean it's not online anywhere?
I haven't seen it. I don't know. I don't think it's on any of the services.
Seeing it, but I never really did, cause it used to be in syndication for a while. Right.
As it would, right? But that's, you know, again, it came out 16 years ago, and like so many of these things, it just sort of
went away.
It was, and then it wasn't. Hmm. Yeah, if you search it inside of Apple right now, it doesn't even come up. It's not even an option, so it's not listed on any service that they're connected to.
What was the name of that Blu-ray site that you used to send us to?
It's just Blu-ray.com, Blu-ray.com.
Yeah, they list all the specials and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up that you can buy. But I mean, it's kind of funny, like, why are we buying things on the Apple Store or App Store these days when we can just pretty much wait for it to come out on some service, right? That's the thing, right?
It's true, although there is that, again, that sense of permanence. I think people, they assume that
Tenet because is only $9.99. Oh, wait, I have to go to Canada, don't I?
Yeah, you have to go to Canada. You do have to, you do have to be careful because some stuff Friends and Seinfeld and The Simpsons and stuff like that are going to be on a streaming service for, you know, probably decades to come because of their place in the zeitgeist. But if you liked some smaller show that was on for a couple seasons. Oh, the other one is, do you remember a series from the 90s called Dark Angel? Dark Angel was one of Jessica Alba's first projects. It was a Fox sci-fi show. It was set in this world where an EMP went off, I believe in Seattle.
Yep. And they had the promos with her on the very top of the Space Needle.
Right, oh, yeah. Right.
I've been there.
So have I. That series was only around for two seasons. It got canceled after that. And they put out the DVD box sets. And that was the end of it. There's been no more. And again, you can't stream it. You can't watch it anywhere. If you don't have those sets, you are SOL. And I, by no means do I suggest that this is a great you know, monumental series worthy of you know, preservation or anything like that. But, you know, Jessica Alba's gone on to have a pretty good career. And I think it's interesting that, you know, it just has just dropped off the face of the earth. And James Cameron, I think, was the co-creator of it, too. Like, it's wasn't a nothing show. I loved that. My favorite part of that show is that is that they wanted it to be futuristic in like 2000 and what was the year did it come out? I'm just looking it up here. 2000 and it came out in the year 2000 and it was set in 2019. So there you go. They wanted it to look futuristic. So for the cars in the future, for the 20 in the future car, they were all driving Pontiac Aztecs. Those ugly ass station wagon looking things that had the trunks that opened up and made a tent.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were like, that's what the future will be. We'll all have tents in our cars. Yeah. And just even in the moment I was like, that's dumb. And it does not hold up well if you ever go back and watch it.
Well, do you remember John Michael Vincent, Jan Michael Vincent?
Jan Michael Vincent. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a vehicle that you would see in sci-fi movies. It had big giant wheels, and I think there was like six of them. But this particular vehicle was used in like, I can't think of how many sci-fi movies and TV shows.
Yep.
Damnation Alley, I think, was one of them where it was that vehicle. Let me look that one up. Because yeah, this the same, it's like you said, the same vehicle that was like, this is late 70s, early 80s, and it was just in every single thing.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I forgot. I used to go to the Kingsway Theater in Etobicoke because they would show movies for $2. Like you could pay $2 and you could get in and watch, like, you know, they would show one movie and then the second movie and then they would show the first one again. Mm. So you could go in there for $2 and hang out for the night and partay and have, you know, just like hang out there and check it out. Right. So, yeah, if you go to Damnation Alley was the name of the TV show that he was in, or was this a movie? But if you go there, there's a picture of this vehicle, and it's sort of like a boat car kind of deal, right? But it's kind of like what the future vehicles will look like. But this particular vehicle was used in so many different things. Oh, look who's it. It's Paul Winfield. Yeah, Damnation Alley. Damnation. Sort of a, you know, I guess, what year was this? 77? So this predates Mad Max, right?
Yeah.
George Peppard was in it.
What?
Before the A-Team. Oh, yeah.
Nice. I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah. I love when a movie comes out. Oh, yeah. Oh, and what's his name? Jackie Earle Haley.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jackie Earle Haley. He's a kid. Rorschach from Watchmen.
Yeah, this is when he was cute. He was a kid back then. So yeah. Interesting. But yeah, that same vehicle, I used to see that in all kinds of different shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, it's Star Trek box set. $100 for... sure, we paid less than that for Star Trek on iTunes.
Yes, very much so. Although we may have overpaid considering it included Star Trek 3, one. 5.
Yeah. I told you it was like three movies for the price of 10. I remember saying that.
Yeah.
Look, The Crown is out on Blu-ray.
Ooh. I was surprised. I must admit, I haven't gone to that. So that Blu-ray.com has, obviously, it tells you the digital stuff. It tells you the releases. I went on the other day to look at what's coming out on 4K. And
yeah,
it's amazing the amount of stuff that they're still pushing out on 4K. It's A, it's very expensive. And B, it's, you know, like there's not as many places to purchase it now. So, you know, you're kind of at the mercy of whatever price they want to charge you for it. It's an expensive hobby. If you want to continue collecting physical media, and obviously there are reasons for doing so because the quality is quite high, but yeah. Oof, it is not cheap.
A friend of mine gave me his 4K player. That's how popular it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Go to the iTunes store. See what's on the iTunes. Ooh, Game of Thrones iTunes.
Oh yeah. Game of Thrones is on sale this week.
Yeah. Avengers, a bunch of Avengers, three Avengers movies.
All the MCU stuff's on sale this week too.
$9 for Endgame.
Yep.
Ratatouille, Jaime. You can get Ratatouille. Event Horizon was my favorite half sci-fi movie.
Jaime is busy pricing out Pontiac Aztec so that he fits into 2020 Seattle.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. All the Marvels are $9.99 in Canadian dollars.
Yep. It's heartbreaking though, because if you flip over to the American one and look at the prices, you're like, oh, so like all the movies on iTunes USA are like $5, $3.
Yeah.
And then you go to Canada, you're like $10, $15. I'm like, thank
you. Oh, it's exchange rate. We argue with the guys about that all the time, and I always get pointed out that I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well,
wrong again.
wrong. It feels like wrong than it is hyperbole of like, oh, it's a dollar in the US. Oh, it must be $47.95 in Canada. But I get your point's well taken. Your point's well taken. That's
sad but true.
Yeah. We get paid in Canadian dollars too. That's the problem, right? Mm.
See, good deal.
How do I know where to go look? All right, I'll check it out.
There you go. And I can jump off and actually speak to my mother because I sent her a text earlier, but she was busy. So.
Oh, yeah, you should do that.
Jump off and wish her a happy birthday. Well, it's still her birthday.
Yeah, cool. All right, kids.
All right, we'll speak next week.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.